Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Over the course of the past couple of days, in the run-up and on the occasion of the 15th anniversary of 9/11, there's been an awful lot of discussion, understandably, about the nature of the conflict we find ourselves in, notably really starting for many of us, at least on that day, 15 years ago, and why it is we haven't done better in fighting this war, and whether, in fact, we are safer as a result of our efforts to this point. I'm very pleased to welcome for the first time Elon Giorno. He is a fellow and a director of policy research at the Ayn Rand Institute and the co-author of a new book, Failing to Confront Islamic Totalitarianism, From George W. Bush to Barack Obama and Beyond. He is a man who's published widely in a number of other outlets, Foreign Policy, Middle East Quarterly, the Claremont Review of Books being a few of my favorites. And it's a delight to have him here. Welcome and congratulations on the publication of your book.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what I'm struck by, Elon, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, as it's, I think, central to your thesis, is when we hear people talking, as they seem to do increasingly now, about some ideology that animates the threat we're facing, yet they fail, it seems, basically pretty much without exception, to name it. What's up with that? And can you help us identify what the ideology is that we're confronting?
Definitely. And I think the place to start is the natural starting point for most people is ignorance. But we're 15 years past that point for anybody to take seriously that excuse. And I think it's never been a secret what this ideology is. I think the failure comes from our refusal to think seriously about it and honestly about it. I would say we call it Islamic totalitarianism. It has a lot in common with previous incarnations of a totalitarianism. This one is rooted not in the works of Karl Marx. This one is rooted in the works of the religion of Islam. But it really is an ideology. It's a movement that seeks to impose Islamic rule as far and wide as they can by force. And we've seen examples of it, the Taliban regime pre-2001 in Afghanistan, Iran still to this day, Islamic State. There are variations on the same theme and severity, and I would include Saudi Arabia too. So one of the reasons people refuse to understand what this is it makes people very uncomfortable to imagine or even to believe that a religious doctrine could lead to a totalitarian political system. And I think the other factor here is that if we look ourselves in the mirror, how many people really take any ideology seriously in our society, any belief system? It's hard to imagine that anybody else does, meaning the enemy does, and that the enemy is actuated by a belief system, an integrated view of the world. So it is a failure of imagination, as people used to say after 9/11. But it's deeper than operational, it's deeper than intelligence. It has to do with the role of ideas and philosophic ideas. And I consider Islamic totalitarianism to have a philosophic orientation. And that's a big problem. We need to really think seriously about that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're talking with Elon Giorno, the co-author of Failing to Confront Islamic Totalitarianism, From George W. Bush to Barack Obama and Beyond. And there is, in your title, of course, the key point, which is that this is not a partisan critique, Elon. This is something that we've seen afflicting American policy going back to, well, literally the day of 9/11, I think, and certainly throughout both Republican and Democratic administrations. I kind of describe this the way I think its adherents do, as Sharia, to make a distinction between, you know, the practice of just the faith and this political totalitarian program But there's no getting around it that those who follow Sharia, you know, in the authoritative fashion, are obliged to try to impose it, as you say, in a manner that is very reminiscent of Nazism and communism and fascism before it on the entire world, Muslim, by the way, and non-Muslim alike.
Yes, I think it follows from having a doctrine rooted in faith, essentially, which is, and I believe communism was a faith doctrine too. And it follows because how do you persuade people to follow your faith? There's no evidence or logic that, by definition, that you could point to, no facts in the world. And the way people accept this doctrine is that they've been told to accept it by an authority, and they themselves see themselves as authoritative and seeking to impose it on other people. I think there's really no way around it. And you see this in different examples through history. It's a serious problem that we're reluctant to believe that there really are people who are actuated by these ideas. On the how to characterize it, I definitely make a distinction between people who espouse the religion of Islam and people who act in the name of a totalitarian goal. I think there's a different and distinct and should be separated. And it's important to see that there's a different. But my view is that every jihadist or everyone who's seeking to impose Islamic totalitarianism is a Muslim. But it's not the case, far from it, that every Muslim is seeking to do that. That's not true at all.
This is obviously made more difficult, this grasping reality, as you've indicated, by the fact that some of our putative friends, like the Saudis and the Pakistanis, are deeply engaged in this kind of totalitarianism and spreading it worldwide. Another factor is that the Muslim Brotherhood, a group that many have embraced as the alternatives to the violent extremists that we're endlessly warned are the real enemy here, not Sharia-adherent Muslims, not jihadists, even violent extremists. What would you say about the role of these entities, the state sponsors on the one hand and the Muslim Brotherhood on the other, and how they fit into why we are so willfully blind about this problem and therefore less able to deal with it?
I think it's crucial to recognize that state sponsorship is a necessary condition for the existence of Islamic totalitarianism, the fact that it's grown over the last 40, 50 years to become this powerful force in the world and a dangerous, destructive one. And I think it's integral to seeing what needs to happen to stop it, too. Now, I think the Muslim Brotherhood is important in many ways to understanding the problem, because, as I'm sure you know, it is one of the origins for so many of the splinter groups that ended up in Al-Qaeda, and not just Al-Qaeda, of course, Hamas being another example. I think what's significant here is, as you put it, there's this view that we can divide along a continuum called radicals versus and extremists versus moderates. I don't think you can be a moderate. I don't think there's any meaning to that if what you stand for is Islamic totalitarianism. There's no moderation in that, and moderation is not something you can apply to ideas. That either you believe in it and you act on it, or you don't, or you're compromising on it. But that you still have to recognize the full implications of the ideas you hold. So from that perspective, I don't think we should be espousing this kind of distinction between radicals and moderates. We need to see what people believe in and what they're acting for and how seriously they take it. And for that reason, it's tragic that for at least during the Obama administration, at certain moments when the Muslim Brotherhood rose to power in Egypt through elections, they were suddenly christened moderates and people we can deal with. That is completely ahistorical, delusional, and I grant the fact that people, certain groups can pretend or act as if they're trying to soften their message. And some groups do soften their message, and you have to be conscious of that. But that's not the thing to assume from the get-go. And I think we've allowed ourselves to be deluded this way, both on the Muslim Brotherhood and other groups as well that are suddenly decided, oh, well, these people are people we can deal with, like Pakistan suddenly, or Saudi Arabia. To me, that's one of the biggest tragedies of American foreign policy, is that we regard them as an ally.
Well, and just to stay with the Brotherhood for one last second, and we'll have to let you go with this, Ilan Jorna, but you have this continuum being bifurcated in the Obama administration, at least between so-called violent extremists and those who are nonviolent, and therefore we can take counsel. It's not just that we, you know, wound up getting sucked into their meme in Egypt, but they are now largely, I think, driving American policy towards the Islamic world in this country to our great detriment. Ilan Durno, thanks so much for your time today. Next up, Richard Pollack joins us. We'll talk about the Clinton Foundation, Clinton emails, Clinton health, and more. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.